supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, as my late mother aged and her memory deteriorated, it seems all she could remember was the family members she was angry at. And she was angry at her cousin Esther for not inviting me to dinner when I was a graduate student at Temple. That was 30 years prior to my mother's death. So whether it's a sense of injury or betrayal, some of these family estrangements can last for decades and even generations. So on today's show, we're going to be talking about how these rifts happen, why they stick, and how we get along about healing them. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. I am sure there might be one or two of you that have some of these rifts in your family. Give us a call. 888-477-9499. It's kind of an open show about family relationships and conflicts therein. My guest is Dr. Ellen Berman. She's a family psychiatrist and clinical professor of psychiatry in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania, and I should say a friend and colleague of mine for, I don't even know how many decades. we'll just keep that between us. So, Ellen, this business of family cutoffs, so it's been around as long as families
absolutely
have been around. I mean, the Old Testament is ripe with family cutoffs and estrangements and resentments. So there's got to be something in our hardwiring, Ellen, that you know, is this just the nature of families or intimate relationships?
Well, you know, I think that we expect more of our family members than we expect of anyone else. Families are held together by love, but also by loyalty and guilt. And when you expect unconditional love and you don't get it, or you feel that you've been treated unfairly, I think it gets in your soul in a way that nobody else can do. And so I think that when you feel injured or powerless or angry, how you handle it very much depends on your culture, your beliefs, the family beliefs. You know, there are people who will beat someone up but won't cut off. And there are people who will cut off but would never touch them. And, you know, I think it's basic part of the fight-flight response. What is hardwired into the system is that when you sense danger, your body revs up for what's called fight or flight. You either run or you fight or you freeze. Those are kind of the only options if you feel like you're not safe. Your body gears up, right? Your blood pressure goes up and your pulse goes up and your brain changes. And that fight-flight reaction, you want to do something. And if you can't figure out what else to do, sometimes you cut off.
And rightly, in those evolutionary genes, we are hardwired to expect our intimate clan is a safe place.
That's right.
If not there, where?
Yes, our attachment bonds are extraordinarily powerful, and the family is supposed to protect you.
Let's get a little specific here. Philadelphia sports fans, and bless all of our hearts, but here in Philadelphia, we know, for example, a couple of years ago, maybe less, Ryan Howard got tons of money. He built a home for his extended family down in Florida, and there was a rift between siblings, and they wound up in court. It settled out of court. I don't know how. It doesn't matter. But they were in court, and just recently we heard about Philadelphia Phillies owner, one of the owners, John Middleton, was recently taken to court by his sister. Again, a contract dispute. And I don't know. My daughters just called each other's names. You know, but these sibling relationships are very hard to navigate. And I wonder what these external influences, like great wealth, does to these relationships.
Well, you bring up two different issues. One is siblings, and the other is how does money make it even more complicated? Sibling relationships are complicated at best. And generally, in my experience, when they explode like that, that is the end product of many, many years of rivalry, of anger. Often, I don't know those particular histories, but particularly between an older sibling and a younger sibling, where the younger sibling doesn't feel empathized with or protected or feels very one down. Sometimes when the parents have clearly preferred one kid, or one parent's preferred one kid and the other parents preferred the other kid, so they are basically acting out a parental conflict. And there's no question that money is a symbol of love as much as anything else in families. So I'm not surprised that the more money there is, the more it ends up in court.
I want to address something you said, Ellen. When you talked about one parent favoring one child,
right,
and the other favoring another, mm-hmm, that's not unusual, and that's not necessarily pathology. There's something about that that's kind of normal, depending on a lot of circumstances, including who has which predominant genes in them.
If the parental unit is functioning, even if it is easier for one parent and one kid to get along,
yeah,
both children feel that they have access to both parents, that both parents care about them. But if the parents are having a fight, then the kids will end up each taking the parent's side. Or sometimes if one kid gets the mom and one kid gets the dad, but the dad's a workaholic and isn't ever home, then you've got a problem.
And of course, the most common family rift is divorce. And for those who don't get divorced, what's the percentage of, our language is emotional divorce or unhappy marriages?
Divorce is a particularly painful cause of estrangement. And even more than the divorce, if one or both parents has a second marriage in which the new spouse desperately wants to forget that there are children from the old spouse, parents very often, particularly if the kids are difficult teenagers or adults, just give up on their first kids. Actually, there's some very depressing statistics about non-custodial fathers who are paying money but do not have any very little custody. A lot of them don't see their kids at all after the first year.
Yeah, it's kind of heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And often, 20 years later, there'll be some kind of rapprochement, but you can't get those years back. So
right. Right. Coming back to the Old Testament, if only that had happened with Isaac and Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
We might not have war in the Middle East today. Who knows? Oh, dare to dream, Ellen. Let's go to the phones. We've got a lot of people lined up. We'll start with Dee. Hi, Dee.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
I have adult children. They both live about 10 minutes from me. My daughter is married with two kids. My son is gay, lives with his partner. My son has an addiction problem as well as a health problem. And recently my daughter just got angry with my son's civil union spouse and has cut herself off totally from them. And I'm kind of the mother in the middle, that I can't ever have a family gathering now with everyone with me. It has to be one or the other, and it's very difficult.
Dee, don't go away. We're going to Ellen and I are going to noodle this through, because it's a story I have heard over and over in my practice, Ellen. I'm sure you have
yeah.
too. So what do we do? How can we help this mother in the middle?
Well, I think the first question is, can she get out of the middle? Because parents can't fix this. They can wish, they can talk, but they can't really fix it. And I think that a lot of the issue is the parent handling their own pain, because one of the fantasies about family is that everybody will get along, and often they don't.
Yeah, and it's more than a fantasy. I mean, it's an ache inside that we all have.
Absolutely.
From birth to death.
One of the questions is, you know, this is another in-law question where the sister got mad at the partner. And that's also kind of interesting, is why has she cut herself off from both of them? And I would guess there are some things you don't know, Mom, that they haven't told you. And probably shouldn't.
Dee,
Well, she's always been, I've been through, you know, lots of therapy regarding his addiction problem, and I know that she has always resented what it does to my husband and I.
Right.
When he does go through a relapse.
Right.
So, you know, that underlying resentment is there.
So there's a couple of things. You know, first, you know, that we therapists always wonder is who is in the most pain in the system, and how can we best care for the one who's in the most pain? And I'm just going to take a wild guess and say that that's you at this moment, Dee. So
I think it's a good guess.
Yeah. So what can be best be done for you to come to grips with your powerlessness here? You know, for you to deal with whatever feelings you might have, whether it's anger, fear, grief, maybe all of the above, Dee.
Right.
And I think the best you can do with your daughter and your son, probably individually right now, is simply to talk about your pain and sadness. That's all. Without encouraging them to go one way or the other, without having them take responsibility for it. Just, you know, you're in pain and you're going to take care of your pain. I would also recommend, I don't know if this fits with your personality, but I don't know if you've been in Al-Anon, but they're very helpful in helping you set boundaries.
Yeah, I actually have been. I periodically. I mean, this is a long, you know, a long term. He's in his 40s, so it's a long term problem. But I think the suggestion perhaps to talk with them each individually. And what you're basically saying is just tell them how much pain I'm in, but then just leave it at that and let them take that.
Yeah, and please, it's really important, Dee, that you just share what you are experiencing without a hidden agenda there, that, you know, they'll pick it up and do something differently. Be careful there, because, you know.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you.
I wonder if I could generalize a little from your experience, Dee, which is one of the things that happens when one sibling is addicted is they get enormous amount of attention. So that I think your daughter probably feels both protective of you and angry about how much attention that's taken. And I think, you know, this may or may not be temporary, but I think she also has a right to her feelings at this point, and perhaps just accepting the fact that they both have a right to be in pain and not necessarily together might help a little.
Yeah, and my hunch is all three of you individually feel very, very misunderstood.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if I made this clear, but she's angry with a significant other because he is a classic enabler. I mean, an enabler beyond. And she feels that he's responsible, partially, very, very strongly responsible for where my son finds himself.
Well, you know, one wonders always What's the emotion that might be behind anger, and it could just be fear and helplessness, if you know what I mean, Dee.
Yes.
Yeah, I know you do. All right, thanks so much for your call.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, both of you.
Take care. You said, Ellen, I forget if it was in one of your articles or on your web page, you said that few problems are because of one individual, of course, or even just because of the relationship. What else?
Well, I think you have to look at the culture, at biology, at the person, and both people. So some problems really are partly biological. You know, serious mental illness, addiction is really a biological problem. Generally, when couples are having a problem, both people may or may not have their... Well, everybody has their own individual issues. I was reminded of the time one of my professors said to me, well, you know, everybody has psychodynamics. And I was crushed because I thought I wouldn't have psychodynamics. But in fact, everybody's hooked up in particular ways. And who you pick or who you're with brings out certain parts of you. I remember a time, you know, I have friends with whom I'm the organized, sensible one, and friends with whom they're so much more organized and sensible that I'm the loose, crazy, spontaneous one. Generally, I think...
I'm curious, Dr. Berman. Yeah, I mean, you open that door, honey.
Absolutely.
So which group are you most comfortable in?
It depends on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If I'm giving a talk, I'd rather be with the person who's more organized than me.
Yeah, you're
and if I'm at the beach, I'd rather be with the person who's more spontaneous than me. And of course, that's the problem, because if you're married, you're with the same person all the time. And I think it's always easier to know what they're doing to us than what we're doing to them.
Let's take a short break. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We're talking about estrangements, family cutoffs, family conflicts today on Voices in the Family. We're talking with Dr. Ellen Berman, who's a clinical psychiatrist, and we're taking your calls at 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I want to hear much more about sibling cutoffs. I want to hear about a whole issue, Ellen, we have to talk about with step families, and when we come back from our break, I really want to talk about how the healing process happens. You know, we spoke with a caller, Dee, a few minutes ago, and, you know, one of the bottom lines here is tolerating your own helplessness, knowing where you have influence and where you don't. So not all rifts get fixed.
This is true.
They? Yeah.
No. And I think we also ought to talk about parent-child cutoffs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, parent-child cutoffs. We'll do that right after our break. Well, like I said, our number is 888-477-9499. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or online at philafound.org.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen tomorrow to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us for NPR's Morning Edition, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about family cutoffs and estrangements with family psychiatrist Dr. Ellen Berman. Before we went to break, Ellen, you wanted to talk about cutoffs between parents and children.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about those.
Okay. I think those are really incredibly painful because, I mean, if you're a child and you need to cut off from a parent, or you think you need to cut off from a parent, you've cut off from your whole history. And certainly if you're a parent and your child cuts you off, that's one of the most painful experiences there is.
Almost death-like.
It is. It causes tremendous grief. And often those don't get solved for decades. And sometimes the worst ones are the ones that come that look as if they come out of the blue because people haven't realized that things have been getting worse and worse.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, if we're not talking about parental or child addiction or mental illness or trauma, a lot of the cutoffs between parents and children are failures of empathy. That is, the other person isn't really reading them. So the child keeps saying, would you stop doing this, 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 this to the parent, and the parent blows them off. And if there's a family history of cutoffs, again, if cutoff is a normal thing in the family, very often the person who feels most helpless and rageful will just leave. And that's really terrifying because if you haven't figured out, if you don't know things have been getting bad and there's a sudden cutoff, you're even more helpless. And
what can be done, Ellen?
Well, sometimes it's temporary. Sometimes it's just time for the child and the parent to quiet down. But I think the most powerful thing is both people really being willing to listen to the other person and accept that the other person's point of view is different. That's a place where we often do recommend therapy. And I do a lot of adult-child-parent meetings as consultations because I think sometimes in order to really hear the other person, you need a mediator. That used to be the elders of the tribe, but now very often the elders of the tribe is us.
Yeah, that's true. I usually often say to an adult child that there's certain moments in people's lives when you're the grown-up now and you might be older than your parents emotionally at this moment.
This is true.
And it's important for you to act like a grown-up. So if you feel that you haven't been heard for all these years, maybe it's time to listen. Instead of pursuing the same thing over and over that you haven't gotten, maybe it's time to listen. What's your life like, Mom, Dad? What was it like raising me? You know, you flip things around and it often changes things, but it's very, very, very hard to do. Takes courage.
I think one of the wonderful things you suggested is to go home and find and really get the story of the parent's life. Because often what you realize is that sometimes they are behaving badly, but a lot of times it's not about the kid. It's about their own life. And I think hearing that often reduces that sense of helpless rage. And then I do want to say that there are degrees of cutoff. I mean, it's one thing to never talk to your parent again, but it's another to say, well, you know, I'll show up for holidays, but I'm not really going to let you into my life. And I think there are a lot of ways that adult children manage parents who really are behaving badly or have behaved badly, and that gets renegotiated every year, every decade. Because I think no matter what's happened, parents and children still have an underlying wish to be connected to each other. I don't think that wish ever goes away no matter what.
No, I don't think so either. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Kellen on the line. Hey, Kellen.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
Hi. So I was calling about actually what you guys are discussing right now, which is parent-child estrangement. And something that's very frustrating for me oftentimes as a child who's, well, adult child now, who's put the parent out of her life is sort of this sense that there's a should kind of behind a lot of the discussion that I should be trying to fix things, or I should be being the bigger person or being the adult in the situation. And in my case, I don't not speak to my father because I'm mad at him, or like it's been happening since I was 15, actually. It's because, frankly, he's kind of a sociopath. And I've tried to remedy my relationship with him multiple times. But it doesn't work because, like, I don't know. I do it because it's sort of the mentally healthy thing for me to do, as opposed to, you know, out of anger or vindictiveness, I think. And sometimes I think it is healthier not to have a relationship, and that is the adult thing to do.
Well, of course. You know, of course. When you're at risk, yeah, you need, I mean, you know, we also call that boundary, you know, and mm-hmm. you need a boundary when you're at risk. But I do want to ask a question, Kellen. How come you called, other than clarifying things appropriately for what I said, but how come you called? Is there anything you want by calling?
It's frustrating for me because I get a lot of sort of this attitude that I should be doing something different. And I don't think it's a side that people hear that often. I thought my dad was going to kill my mother when I was in high school. He's, you know, his indiscretions, you can find them online because he's been the target of sexual harassment claims. And it's rare to find something that is so sort of on the extreme of it. It's really like a terrible thing to try to keep him in my life. But I find that when I talk to people about it, there's this sort of normative assumption that like I'm doing something wrong or I'm being a bad child, by keeping my father out. And, it's difficult to hear that over and over again. And
yeah,
so I just
yeah.
wanted to, you know, make that point for you guys.
So you grew up with a father who was dangerous physically and emotionally. You make a decision to do what you need to do so that you can survive, thrive, have your own life independent of this danger. And now you're being judged on top of it all.
Right.
Nice. Ellen, what are your thoughts about this?
I think there are times when you need to not have a relationship because for your emotional or physical safety. I think that the tough part about that is even if you know that you're doing the right thing and everyone's telling you that you're doing the right thing, there's also a loss to that, and one has to acknowledge that loss even if you're doing the right thing, and that's sad. And, you know, you don't know where you'll be in 20 years. Maybe he'll change. Maybe you'll decide you want to see if he's changed. I don't know. But I think absolutely there are times when that you need to take care of yourself. I think that's the balance that we all have to figure out.
I also, Kellen, I want to come back to something that we talked about earlier before you called.
Sure.
Even if you maintain this cutoff for the rest of his life, of your mm-hmm. life, I wonder if the cutoff would be less of a burden for you, a weight for you, if you could wonder about what this guy is like beyond labels and beyond behaviors. If you could just wonder where he came from, how he grew up, how X might have influenced this behavior. And I'm not suggesting you do it for the sake of healing this relationship. I'm suggesting you do it so that you will feel just less weight. I can't find a better word for that.
No, I understand, and that's something that I've thought about a lot, and I've talked through a lot with my mother, and I have a brother who's still in contact with him, so I'm sort of still in touch with what's going on in his life, but not really participating in it myself.
Well, I do wish you the best, Kellen, and I hope you heard support and no judgment from the two of us here on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
I really appreciate your time, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call. It's really important to have that perspective.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you really do have to do that, to take care of yourself. And a lot of therapists encourage it.
I think therapists do. I think that a lot of times it's really clear that the person needs the cutoff. Sometimes it's not quite so clear until you look at it. You know, I would be interested to know why her brother still maintains contact and what's that done to him. So that I think that the question is everybody decides for themselves what they need.
Yeah, and now you talk about the brother and that connection, and you wonder about her mother, and I don't want to just talk about Kellen, but now you've taken it from an individual who suffers and a father who engages in these aberrant, deviant behaviors. Now you're talking about a larger system.
Right.
You're talking about a
right.
family system.
Right.
And you family therapists talk about that a lot. There's a lot of kinds of family systems. And, you know, some are very rigid with high expectations
mm-hmm.
and a lot of shoulds. And some are less so. And that also affects how we relate to each other, how we relate to ourselves, and the kind of relationship we have with our parents. Growing and individuating in rigid families can sometimes be much harder than it is in more flexible families.
Growing and individuating in very rigid families often involves a temporary, partial or complete cutoff until the person can figure out who they are. But hopefully, everyone will eventually soften. Often it's a life cycle issue where there's a softening, where the child has a baby, where someone gets ill. And the whole family begins to soften its rigid stance. I think a lot of times these days, I mean, family therapy came of age where enmeshment was the key word.
Yeah, yeah.
But at this point, I think more families have become disengaged, and the issue is how to maintain connection.
Why do you say that, Ellen?
Why do I think the culture has changed? Or
no, why do you think families have become disengaged? Because you look at it on the surface and, you know, everybody's all over everybody, you know, driving kids to organize this and that.
Well, I think that's true in some families in some areas. But the number of people living alone in this culture has gone spectacularly up. The number of people moving to the other side of the country has gone spectacularly up. We all have our own phones and our own TV shows, and there's a lot of push for individuation, self-satisfaction. So I think it, you know, on the one hand, there's helicopter parenting, and on the other hand, there are all the pictures of the parents holding the baby in one hand and the cell phone in the other.
Right.
So I think one sees both, actually, and the question is, what does that particular family need, and how do you maintain boundaries and still have a sense of self?
We're talking with Dr. Ellen Berman today about family cutoffs and estrangements. Our number is 888-477-9499. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Mark on the line. Hey, Mark.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
This is Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. I'm surprised to be on the phone so fast. I can relate to just about everything that was said so far, except in our family, we don't really have addiction problems or anything like that. We're very straight-laced, not exciting group of people, but the one downside we have is a lot of, at least from my side of the family, I'm married, I have three kids grown. My side of the family has always had a lot of depression. And so I've been embroiled in, since I was growing up, multi-generational estrangement. My mother and her siblings, my mother and my sister. I was growing up, I was the kid in the middle, trying to maintain peace between, you know, the bickering and the hurts and the cutoffs. And now as adult with my own grown children. We have, you know, it's just, it's, I mean, I could, the details would take forever, but it's just, you know, more of the same. I've been married almost 30 years. My, what that brought into the picture was when my mother-in-law passed away about 5 years ago, there was some money, and so then that caused a whole rift in my wife's family. And then my, in the middle of all that, when they were fighting over the estate, and the estate attorney's comment was, the more money, the more dysfunctional the families can become, my wife got sick. And instead of, like when you said about sometimes that can soften families, that actually had the opposite effect. And then my wife felt completely abandoned by her close-knit family for a long time. And
Mark,
it was her
Mark,
and her sister
Mark,
versus
how,
her
Mark,
brother.
Mark.
Yes.
How can we help you?
What
do you need?
My concern is, the immediate concern is, now I have grown kids. We've tried everything we can to keep that from, you know, the same thing happening again in the next generation. But some of what we try to do as my kids were growing up has kind of backfired, because we try to maintain some relationship between cousins.
The adults are
now cut off, and so the kids are, like, we're sort of don't know what to do. You know, how do we maintain our, how do we have our kids maintain relationships, and we're on the verge of, you know, family events coming in, and who do we invite and who do we not invite, and how do we keep the peace?
Oy vey, oy vey.
It's a big oy vey. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I've dealt with this my entire life. And I don't know how to.
We think Barack Obama has a tough job keeping the peace.
Yeah.
Keeping the peace in your family, oh my God! The job description's not meaningful.
I mean, we've had counseling. We've talked to our clergy.
Let's hear what Ellen has to say. Hold on a minute, and just let's hear what Ellen's thoughts and mine.
Well, you know, like Dan said the last time, who's in the most pain? And I think the problem is, you've tried to be a family therapist since you were 5 years old and without any training. And the first issue is to get you out of the middle, to accept the fact that you love everybody and you have no power to fix all of these things. And that is really hard. Giving up the hope or the fantasy that somehow you can fix it is a really painful experience. But it sounds like you've tried a lot of things, and that just saying, you know, the kids may not have relationships with their cousins. As long as they have relationships with me and they're functioning, we're going to just start there.
Yeah, and you know, I was half joking, Mark, when I made that comment about the job description. I think Ellen's saying the same thing. It's time for you to hand in your resignation, and. We don't know what's going to happen. Could get better, could get worse, could stay the same, but hear this, it could get better. There's just as much of a chance of that as there is for things getting worse. All you have to know is there's not much you can do about it. And I think it's really important to have you and whoever else is involved happy, content, have a sense of well-being with your life. And that's got to be the first priority. And, you know, who knows what the fallout of that's going to be. So I wish you the best. I wish your story was very unique. Unfortunately, it's not. I mean, how many children do we know that really carry the responsibility for the whole family on their shoulders? We've got to take a short break right now. We'll be back in 60 seconds and take more of your phone calls with Dr. Ellen Berman, who's a family psychiatrist, was one of the early wave of family therapists, along with yours truly. She's a clinical professor of psychiatry in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also director of training for the couples and adult families at the University of Pennsylvania, and we've got their link on our website. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY FM.
Proudly supporting WHYY is Camp Hill Special School, an accredited Waldorf school with day and boarding options dedicated to redefining what is possible for children with special needs. Students contribute to the community as a whole by taking part in festivals, starring in plays, caring for animals, participating in student council, and fulfilling meaningful roles in their on-campus homes. Campus tours on April 29th and May 20th at 9 a.m., and an open house is on May 16th. Details at camphillspecialschool.org.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, offering its 2015-16 season of diverse ideas and world perspectives. 7 engaging evenings at the Kimmel Center with a lineup of celebrated personalities, including Captain Mark Kelly and former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, rights activist Ayaan Hirsi Ali, former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, and CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Sanjay Gupta. More information online at philadelphiaspeakerseries.org. Sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about family conflicts, difficulties in relationships, cutoffs, fears of cutoffs. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're talking with family psychiatrist Ellen Berman, who became a family psychiatrist almost before there was such a thing as family psychiatrists.
Shh, don't tell.
That's when they first invented families is when she and I got into this. Ellen, let's go right to the phones. We've got Arcadia on the line. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Dan.
Hey. What can we do for you, Arcadia?
All right. So I'm 35 now, but when I was 17, I left home, and my family was just my mother and my brother. And I left because my mother was extremely violent and unpredictable. She's never been diagnosed, but she obviously is very, very mentally ill. And it was a horrible, horrible situation. She moved us around a lot. She passed me around. I was sexually abused by people she gave me to. I was physically and psychologically and emotionally abused by her my entire life. And so at age 7, she also jumped from religious cult to religious cult. And the very last one she moved us to when I was 15 was so extreme, they actually condoned child abuse. When I went to the church, they said, just be more obedient and everything will be fine. But everything wasn't fine at all. So I left when I was 17. So it's been 18 years now, actually. And my ongoing problem is that when I left her, I thought that I was just going to lose that one toxic, awful relationship, but it turned out that I lost my entire family of every single person who was a blood relative of both of me and her, except for my brother. My brother still communicates with both of us, so that's also another question that I had if we have time just to deal with him. But so all of my aunts, all of my uncles, my grandparents, everyone on that side of the family, they just collectively shut me out.
Do you know
and
why?
My cousins were younger at the time. They wouldn't let me speak to all. There's 11 grandchildren.
Arcadia, yeah, do you know? Ellen just raised a question. Do you know why they cut you off?
Do I know why the family shut me off? No, because when I tried to communicate with them about it, they ridiculed and belittled my attempt to ask them that, actually. I wrote them a letter and said, I don't understand why you're shutting me out. I left to save my life, and now I lost all of you. What's going on? And they never responded to me. They made fun of it, and I found that out, you know, not from them, but from people who still speak to them. And so it's been 18 years, and I saw her father died. My grandfather died a few years after I left home, and I saw her again at the funeral, and she... It was horrible and a horrible situation, and then I haven't seen her since then.
So let me ask you the same question.
Sure.
I've been asking. Arcadia, what is it that you need?
So there's a couple of things that I guess what I really need is vocabulary, because my situation is that I married into a family that's very close. Everybody loves each other. There's no rifts. They're all very supportive of each other, and I'm basically portrayed as a person who, if you make me upset, I'm going to cut you off forever. And I've actually only done that to one person in my whole life, and it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, with my mother. So my in-laws, they all make jokes about, oh, don't make her mad because she'll never speak to you again and that sort of thing. They don't understand it.
Well, it sounds, as you talk, Arcadia.
Yeah.
It sounds like what you're wanting is more than vocabulary, more than words.
Well, vocabulary would be the start because I just want to tell them, like, this. That's your...
What do you want?
Me see, yeah.
What do you want them to know about you? Your heart, your person.
So I've got the two situations. My blood relatives who won't speak to me at all. I don't think I can get anything from them. I think they will never talk to me again. And then there's my in-laws, and I just want them to understand that what I did was what I had to do to even survive. Even to live to turn 18, because it was that hard. And
I think you need your husband's
help.
I've
been married for 13 years, so these people have been my in-laws for 13 years now, and they don't get it. I don't have my blood relatives have all shut me off.
Ellen just made a point, spoken like a true family therapist here. Could you repeat that, Ellen?
I think you need your husband's help, because the person who knows his family is him. And the question is, can he help you talk to them or talk to them himself about what's going on? Because clearly they haven't found a way to embrace you, and that makes you really sad. And I think it really is a whole system issue, and that your husband has to be part of that discussion.
And
he has the same problem they do. He doesn't understand it. He says, what could be the harm if you called her? What could be the harm if you wrote her a letter? Why won't you talk to your mom again? He's just like them, because he grew up happy and safe and feel loved and not worrying where all of his security would come from.
Arcadia, do you feel he understands the pain you lived through? Do you think he understands the anguish you feel now, day to day, the grief you feel?
Yeah. And he feels like it's time to move on. She can't hurt you. She's elderly now. It's okay. You don't have to keep avoiding her. That's the kind of thing he says to me. Because I understand, maybe he understands that I am in pain. I don't think he understands how deep and how it's in every single fiber of me, how it's in my teeth and in my hair, grew with me. It's in me. I can't just, move on or let it go that.
Arcadia.
Yes.
So part of this now is your job is to help him understand, not your rationale and not the storylines, but what it's like to live inside your skin, the pain you feel, the sadness you feel, how you feel judged by others and maybe even by yourself. You could talk about how lonely and alone you feel in this process. And, if he cannot, and just ask him to just listen. Don't react and don't try to fix anything. Just listen.
If they're still trying to fix you, then I would say that also they are feeling some of your pain, and that part of the issue, I think, Dan, you've written about and talked about, is can you find a way to forgive, not in order to get close to your mother, but in order for you to let go of the pain that you have? The question is, even if you never see her again, can you find a way to begin to let go of any of that pain inside? And I think you need your husband's help for that.
Yeah.
And that's actually a word that I didn't use, but I assumed was going to come up, is the forgiveness thing, because that's the other thing that I keep hearing.
That doesn't mean you have to talk to your mother. It means...
Okay.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you have to heal this. Forgiveness means just letting go of the resentment, and it's got nothing to do with condoning behavior or feeling empathy for anybody but yourself. Just being able to let go of resentment. There is some truth there. She can't hurt you anymore for a lot of reasons. So, you can release your grasp now and feel a little bit more free in your life. So I hope that's helpful for you. And I do wish you the best. Ellen, the pain of these cutoffs
really, really incredibly painful. And the pain of continuing to hope is also
worse.
And so I think, you know, for some people, the best they can do is maintain a relationship which is distant enough that they're not always injured, but that there's some connection so that you don't feel this at quite as much of a hole in your heart.
So it's like we say to couples in marital therapy, it's and even individual, it's important for you to be in a relationship with the person who your partner or spouse is, not the person you want them to be, you think they should be, but with that person, and even with yourself, you know, be in a relationship with you as you are now, you know, not who you think you should be.
Right, and that's a hard place to get to. And sometimes you really do have to cut off another person, but if there's a way around it, it's worth looking for it, that's all.
Yeah, because the pain just goes on and on. Ellen, tell us about your program that you're with, the Couples Center for Couples and Adult Families.
Well, we're very proud of this. This is because we believe that a lot of family therapy was centered around little kids who are having problems, and that doesn't leave any room for the wonderful people we've been talking to today who, as adults, are still deeply dealing with family problems. So this is in the Department of Psychiatry. We train the young psychiatry residents how to involve families in treatment so that the families become part of the solution instead of part of the problem. We have a therapist who will see both members of the community and also the families of individual patients who come into the Department of Psychiatry. We're very, very excited about it. It's a very unusual and unique program in the country.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's really heartwarming to hear that you're doing that, Ellen, in these days of biological psychiatry.
The Department of Psychiatry at Penn truly believes in therapy as well as medications. The head of the CCAF is Dr. Jackie Hudak, and we're very excited that we train all of the residents all the time. So,
thank you. Thank you. And thank you. Thank you for the work we're doing. We've been talking about family estrangements today with Dr. Ellen Berman. I also want to thank all the callers who called in, and my apologies to those who didn't get on the air. Well, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Voices in the Fam. Email us at voices@whyy.org. My webpage is drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Zakiya Gibbons is our intern. Larry Roebling produces Voices in the Family. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Hey, please enjoy your week, my friends.